You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and got an episode here with Audrey Martinovich, welcoming her from Madison, Wisconsin, and she has a studio. We're talking audio for the arts. She works in sound engineering, producing, and does a whole bunch of really interesting stuff. Audrey, reaching us from Madison, Wisconsin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm excited to talk with you.
Yeah, same here. Origin question. When you were born into the world, were you an artist?
I would say so, although I don't think I, like, called myself an artist for a while, and I don't even know if I still, I mean, yeah, I do call myself an artist now, but, I mean, as a kid, I was always drawing, always singing, always just trying to, like, make something, and, you know, just listening to a lot of music when I was little and trying to notice all of the nuance of these performances and stuff really drew me in even at such a young age. So, I mean, I consider that to be an artist, even if I didn't really realize it at the time, maybe.
Yeah. I've been enjoying that question. I've been asking it lately, and it just, you know, how people connect, or also too, like, family and background, what you're allowed to connect and allowed mm-hmm. to see. I had mentioned at the outset about you work in sound, and I've expressed to you I'm really interested in this because I've had people around me help developing my ear, and of course this is a podcast. So, could you talk about for you as an artist and working with sound and trying to create an effect and create an art piece? When did you hook into that and say, because of my work in helping produce this sound, I can make this piece of art? Like, what happened there?
I think that's, like, an ongoing journey for me, honestly. Like, I started just pretty much only, like, as an engineer. So, like, I have this musical background, grew up singing, was a singer in high school, studied opera, was a soprano. And through, like, recording my own voice lessons and things, I was introduced to recording from, like, the engineer's perspective and less from a producer or a creator kind of perspective. And once I started just kind of dabbling in that, it kind of opened these doors to, like, well, what is a sound designer and how can you tell a story with sound and why should you pick, you know, this part of this vocal take instead of this other part of this vocal take, like, what grabs your ear about these things differently. And so I think that has really been kind of this journey I've been on more and more recently, is just how can I tell a story through song or through sound in general, because we do, you know, podcasts, and I do sound design for horror films, and, well, not only horror films, but that's just the popular genre of film I work on.
Love horror. That's okay.
Me
even
too.
If you just stuck with horror, it's totally fine.
It's so, well, like, yeah, horror, suspense, thriller, like, I, you know, all of the, even documentaries, like, have a way of telling story through sound and just kind of trying to understand how you can play off of certain emotions and feelings and energies and everything is something that has really been speaking to me. I consider myself, you know, a bit of an empath. I always kind of understand the other person. And so I want to be a bridge to connect that person's story to this other person who doesn't know anything about the story or the project or whatever. Like, how can I connect those two things?
Yeah, and hearing you talk about that, I'm just impacted because it's that connection, you know. I think looking at storytelling, right, and looking
totally.
At in our society right now, where, like, collapse communication structure and public commons in order to have discourse to try to create, you know, that link, I can really connect. You know, probably the wrong word, but, you know.
No, I think that's exactly the right word.
Yeah. So there's a couple big theoretical questions, and one thing about in encounter and your description, your work and stuff, I know you can handle on them. So I want to just like throw a couple out there for the basis of the conversation before we get into things. Been talking a little bit about art and you creating the sound, and what is art?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that art is just like, as a zoomed out perspective, is like an organization of something. So it could be an organization of, you know, clippings from magazines, or an organization of instruments and background vocals. And, you know, to kind of relate it back into sound, it's just someone or something is taking an initiative with deciding how something should be created. And so it's a very vague maybe definition, but I kind of think that anything can be art. Like, even if you look at you know, John Cage's 433, that is a composition, in quotes, of air quotes, of silence, but really, right, you know, it's timed, and you do have to turn your pages at certain points and things like that. So there's that level of organization to it, but there's no melody, and it's kind of like then whatever the room is experiencing or the group is experiencing together becomes that piece and that story. So then each time it's performed differently. And so, you know, it doesn't have to be a sound that is made. It's just, I think, someone with an intention creating a thing.
Yeah. Well, this question is almost, I've noticed lately, almost always gets into intention, right?
Yeah.
What has been done, what manipulation has happened to the thing. And it's like that, you know, that basic and conceptual is that there's, something happened to it. Audrey, I'm asking this question now because I don't want to forget to ask it. But you're into podcasting, and I've been doing podcasting for a couple years independently and learning it. What I've noticed lately is that sound has become really popular now, and that I'm going to give you an example and maybe you can help me with it. So there's this show on Apple that's called Calls, and it's calls between people that are interrelated. There's no video. It's the sound. Are you familiar with it?
I'm not.
Yeah. Okay. So let me describe it. So it is calls, interrelated calls made between people. There is no video. You don't see people. You'll see a name and you'll see a representation of the audio sounds. The representation of the audio sounds creates an effect. All the storytelling is audio, and you're watching a TV show that is really an audio cast, and it's compelling, it's incredible, it draws you. But for me, I see audio lately and the desire for audio almost squishing into video.
Mm-hmm.
Like, post-pandemic, like the video thing, are people like, fuck video, like get away video, and like wanting audio. I'm recognizing some dynamic. Do you see any of this happening, or like what's going on with this?
Yeah, so it's so funny you say that, because through the pandemic, you know, our workload at the studio has changed to incorporate more video, and whether that is doing like recording for live streams or just putting together a slideshow that is on top of like a radio play, you know, so the same kind of thing where it's, you know, an organization of images, although not, you know, people talking or moving on camera. And so there has been that kind of component to it. But I think that the reason that, you know, audio is really taking off as like, you know, like podcasts, for example, have just exploded in the last 5 years. Like, no one knew what podcasting was back then, you know? And then with apps like Clubhouse, where it's just this audio only kind of platform, I think that those are really taking off because they don't really compete for your full attention like YouTube might, where, you know, if you look away from the screen for a second, you might miss a graphic or something that helps you to like understand the context a little better. Whereas with podcasts and stuff, you just have divided attention. So someone can still listen and do the dishes, or listen and clean their house, or, you know, or drive, or whatever it is. So it's just this different kind of level of accessibility. And I think that with the pandemic, like, we're all just trying to make our art accessible in one way or another. So whether that is an audio only format or then going to this kind of live stream, like if maybe a musician who used to have a lot of gigs and now they are taken to Facebook Live only, you know, it's just a way of trying to get your art out in ways that can be digested by your audience.
Yeah. Yeah, and thanks for your comments on that. It seems like there's I'm saying it like fundamentally, and there's a greater desire for audio at the mm-hmm. moment, and I think it's in reaction to things. And you know, part of my thing is with podcasting, or at least conversation like we're trying to have, is like it might be useful for people to hear that people can converse about something that's kind of like important or interesting or at least curious for a little while without the mention of, you know, the way, you know, the kind of the political climate, just to be able to gab a little bit. Right.
Yeah, totally.
So why do you create, Audrey? Why you work hard at what you do? Mm-hmm. You help people make their art. You make your own. Why do you create?
I create to help other people tell their stories, but then also to kind of tell my own story and to even kind of figure out what that is. You know, our journeys through life are always changing, and you know, we're hopefully never stagnant, even through lockdown, you know. That was a whole other story. And so for me to create something, like, I want to give people goosebumps and grab people by the emotions and make people consider new perspectives. And you know, just interfacing that with music is kind of like the natural intersection for that. Like, I love, you know, if I'm trying to give someone a nostalgic feeling, like, okay, what kind of instruments can I choose for that? Should I go for like a toy piano, or are we a little more dreamy? Like, we want a harp, or, you know, or what is it? Like, how can I make that happen? And then, when it's done and seeing someone's reaction to it, or even like the artist's reaction to a song I've produced for them, and just them loving it and like, oh my gosh, yes, this is what I wanted. This hits all of the points. Like, that is so fulfilling. And, it just really is very fulfilling for me to be able to have a hand in that. 'Cause like I said, even if it's not my own story, giving someone else a voice and like the confidence to tell, to speak their truth is really important to me.
Yeah. It's like the, you know, that piece in the puzzle, like where you, it's like, oh,
yeah.
It's there. They've trademarked the sound that Legos make when they click together. That's trademarked sound. Yeah.
Oh,
So you know,
I'm gonna have to make sure to clear rights if I ever use that. Then.
There's something so beautiful and reliable about the, I don't know, it's weird, the two Legos clicking together.
Oh, that's really intriguing.
hey, I'm gonna zoom in on a bit you had mentioned about, I don't know, sound and effect, and you had mentioned horror and working on horror. I just I've done a couple. Done a lot of shows on the podcast, and horror pops up here and there. And I've had two guys, James Sweet and Vin DeSanti, who do very prominent Friday 13th fan films. So,
oh, cool.
You know, horror, like wild
yeah.
stuff. I'm a huge horror buff. Can you just kind of give us a little look or into, we're watching a horror movie. You're in the background trying to make the sound. What's going on with that?
Totally. Yeah. So yeah, one of the things that I love about horror is like the little, like, there's a good opportunity for like Easter eggs. There's a feature length film called The Nursery that I did with a company called Three Tortured Minds. And I was hired to do all the sound design, audio cleanup and dialogue editing, all of that. But then also I was the composer. So, so that was a fun experience, a lot of work, but, super fun. And, so I took all these like little opportunities, like in the score, I centered around, the chords D E A D to spell dead. And which happens to some of the characters. And it's like one of those things that like people wouldn't notice unless they are a musician and they're like, wait a second. And, you know, and it might take them a few times watching the movie. Like, that's the thing. It's like, I want them to watch it again and again.
I love it.
And, like with, if there's like a protagonist or I'm sorry, an antagonist, like the villain or whatever, I always think that they should have kind of a specific cue, like whether it's like a, you know, a bode symbol, as I did in the case of The Nursery, or I'm working on this other horror film for the same company, and that villain has kind of like a, almost like a rattlesnake, like kind of like sound that comes up.
Yeah.
And I love using that to like play with, you know, giving you a hint that there's the villain, or making you think the villain is there when they're really not. And stuff like that is really fun to play with. Like in The Nursery, there is this point where this girl is all alone in this big house and she's babysitting, and we're starting to get a little spooked, but not really a lot yet. And weird stuff is kind of happening. And then all of a sudden there's a knock on the door and she goes to look, and like, she pulls back the curtain. I give this audio cue. She opens the door and it's her friend who just came over. So it's like, it's right. Like, we can kind of psych out the audience a little bit. And then there's stuff you can do like to make the audience like feel goosebumps in the right listening atmosphere. You know, if you boost all these really high frequencies, that is like a reaction our bodies have to that, that we can't help. So I can kind of control like, oh, this part's spooky. I want everyone to have like some goosebumpies going on. And, you know, as I said, I love giving people goosebumps, I guess.
I love it. I have, I do wish to make my one film wish is to make a found footage horror, because I am so I adore that genre, and like people react against it, and I'm just like, I feel about found footage the first day that I saw found footage. I love it just
That's
as
so
much.
Cool. Yeah. I wonder if there's like an audio equivalent, like
we'll figure it out. We'll talk after this.
Yeah, perfect.
No, no, that's good. I appreciate your comment. I mean, like I said, I love horror, I love some of what it does. I wanted to ask you now, Audrey, and you can answer this creatively or like how art appears in the world, but I've asked the question about like the role of art, and it was like it's been a super heavy questions at times, given like what's going on in society, you know, whether it's the pandemic, race inequity around the world, but in the United States and North America, and also just to entertain or to help people survive and get from the beginning of pandemic to the end of pandemic. What do you think is the role of art?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above. Like, I think it is kind of what separates us from other life forms. You know, like birds obviously can have a melody and stuff, but even if you I actually read this interesting study about how birds like perceive melody, because even if they're humming the exact same notes, if you move that line like up a fourth, so it's more of a harmony, the bird has to learn it as a completely new melody. Whereas humans don't operate like that. We see, Wow. Oh, it is the same melody, but it's just, you know, in a different harmonic space. So, and then there are other animals, like dogs can perceive like rhythm, and, you know, they can like kind of bop to a beat, but they don't perceive melody the same way. But that is not the case in humans. Like, we can perceive rhythm and melody and harmonies and organize it and have, you know, this other kind of nuance and meaning and all of this stuff behind it. So, I mean, whether that's like specifically the role of art, I'm maybe not sure, but like, I think that is definitely what separates us. And I think that maybe the role of art then is to give us that human experience, like a way to process the world around us that we don't understand and have been trying to understand as long as we've been around, you know?
Absolutely. No, thank you for that. I have a different question. You work obviously in production of sound and engineering. Say you're working with an artist and they got this song, right? And mm-hmm. they got their pieces and they got their thing that they're doing. And you're going to come in and help them put it all together. What's your relationship with that? I mean, as far as maybe like your fingerprints on what you're creating based on what they have, how does that, can you describe how that works or how you view that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of can operate in a sort of different context, but usually an artist has an idea for a song, whether it's totally fleshed out or not, can be a sliding scale. So they'll come to me and want help with, you know, the chord structure or, you know, what instruments we should choose, just the overall arrangement. And I think it's really important for us to be on the same page about where the song can go. You know, if I'm really feeling like, oh, this would be really great done like Americana with these kind of instruments or whatever, but the artist is like, no, I want to do it in, you know, EDM only, like, then it's not gonna, you know, we're not gonna be a good pair, and it's just not gonna be a product right. that either of us are particularly excited about. So I do think that, you know, someone comes to me and they kind of want some of my fingerprints on whatever yeah. it is they're creating. Otherwise, you know, they could pick someone else who, you know, they want their fingerprints on it instead. But at the same time, like, the artist always has to be able to take ownership of what they're creating. You know, I'm not gonna have someone bring something to me and then tell them, no, they're wrong. All of this needs to be different. We should change this to this and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, it's kind of striking a balance between what I think it should be. But hopefully that is always in line with what the artist thinks it should be, because that's really the most important thing to me, is that the artist is telling their story. You know, if I am feeling like I have a story to tell, I will create a song and release it myself, maybe, or yeah. hire someone to sing it or whatever. I try to honor everyone's intentions.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I appreciate that, because it's the kind of like the question of authorship around
yeah.
in art piece. And I think those are fascinating. A related question. All right. So you're working with the artist and, you know, there's different pieces being added in. Maybe it's extending out a little bit. You're creating a fixed art object at some point. How do you know when it's there? How do you know when it's done?
Yeah. That's always a little squishy too. But I, so I have ADHD. So for me, when I think a song is like done, it's when it holds my attention the whole time. I don't have any spots that I kind of, you know, space out or whatever. And I try to pay attention to those spots, like where I do lose attention, and think, okay, why is that? Is that, do we need, you know, to add a little instrumental flourish here or some like background vocals, or should we cut to silence to like have something totally different and then come back in at full chorus, or what has to happen? And I think that, you know, that can help other people stay in the story of the song longer, because, you know, I think that it adds more impact if someone's mind isn't wandering too much. And since my mind wanders a lot naturally, I have a different scale for, I guess, figuring out, you know, what is holding someone's attention and what isn't.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to ask you another question too. Part of the podcast, I've gotten into music that's newer to me, even though it's traditional, mm-hmm. classical music, the symphony.
Yeah.
About 3 years ago, prior to the pandemic, I had never been to a symphony in my entire life, and there were really reasonable discounts for season tickets for the symphony, which shocked me. Right.
Nice.
I mean, I think my ticket, you know, it still costs money and it's not mm-hmm. accessible to everybody. But I think that my average ticket price to go to all the concerts was like $13.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just averaged out that way. So I started to develop an appreciation for the symphony. But kind of a lifelong learning curve of not knowing it and then being like, oh, what's all this that's going on? I was just interested in your work with the full ensemble and symphony and how you work with them out in Wisconsin. Do you end up doing like recordings that are released later, or how do you work with a full symphony in order to capture their sound?
Yeah, so we do do recordings that are released later. Lately, we've been doing more like small group, like quintet or quartets. I think the largest we've done is an octet with 8 people. It's funny, it was an octet plus a piano player, so really it was 9 people. As far as like a symphony goes, ideally we want to mic up each player, or at least each pair of players. So it can be a big setup. The first violin player, the concert master, they'll usually have their own mic that they don't share, because, you know, we want to sneak a little bit extra of them in the mix. But that's working with orchestras is really what has given me this intrigue about what instruments can I choose to reflect certain things, because I've noticed like, oh, a bassoon can kind of sound like sneaky a little bit, you know, and so hearing how all of these instruments like play with each other, I think has informed, some of my production decisions. For a whole orchestra, we'll probably, we'll record at a hall in town here because we can't fit the timpanis through the door of the studio. So we'll go to like Overture Hall or the Sylvie in Madison, and we'll record each concert. So if it's a live performance, we'll record each of the times the orchestra performs, and then after the audience leaves, we'll record any spots that didn't go well during the performance. So we have a patch session is what it's called, and then we'll take everything back to the studio, and the maestro will have listened through each of the takes, and they make the ultimate decision about what takes to use where, and then I edit it all together.
Thank you for that. Like I said, I'm so interested in that process, and I just stumbled a little bit when you said you had to mic up each one or two of them. I'm like, oh god.
It's like a 70 those. I mean, yeah, we'll bring out like two, we'll have 48 channels of something going on, and and that's a master and a backup, and for more pared down concert recordings we can get away with just miking the front, miking everybody as a group. But if it's for release, if the maestro wants more harp mic, I'm gonna have to have a mic by the harp, so that way when he asks for that we can pull it up. If you mic with just a stereo pair out in front, like a more informal or archival kind of recording, you don't have the control over the individual elements. So it depends on what the end game is. But for release, 70 mics and figure it out.
Wow. I know, having gone to the Oregon Symphony, I knew they had maybe 2 or 3 years ago a prominent recording that was Grammy nominated recording. Yeah. So it was under the Oregon Symphony. I forget which performance, but incredible. Nice. Like I said, an incredible experience for me, and it was accessible for me. Mm-hmm. Dropping back, since you're so nimble on the questions, who or what made you who you are?
Wow. I think we're all a culmination of all of the decisions that you've made. So for me, like, going to school made me who I am. It introduced me to audio, or like the technical aspects of it, like, using Pro Tools and, what microphones and how to use a console and that kind of stuff. But also like working retail has made me who I am, because like I match my clients, pace and their needs, and I can handle people screaming at me and not let it bother me, not that I want that to happen, but it's, it's cool. People have bad days.
But you worked retail.
But I worked retail. So anybody who's worked retail or like food service or whatever, like, that makes you who you are for sure.
I
was gonna say, just generally saying yes to opportunities and like, hey, will you come run sound for my friend's band? Sure, I don't know how to use a console yet, but I'll figure it out. And then you do.
Yeah, we did get sidetracked on, I think it was like the light trauma of working retail.
Oh, man.
I've done it, I've worked a lot of time in supermarkets, which is actually jobs that
I've worked
I love,
in supermarkets too, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love those jobs. I worked third shift there. The pay was shit at the time for me, but I enjoyed the experience and, it develop a good skills when somebody asks you if there are any more in the back.
Right? Yes.
The magical back. And you say, well, let me go check in the back and take a smoke break for 10 minutes and sit
Yep. Most of my retail experience was between either a shoe department of a department store or a makeup department. I was a makeup artist for a while, too. And you definitely learned the like psychology of talking with people, I don't know, you just get a good read for people, once you work with them so much, and working retail is a crash course in working with people.
Yeah, it is. So, and all that comes with it. I got an interesting question for you, a little bit more along the, producing, engineering, and creating an effect. Talking about in terms of ambience and feeling in a room that, obviously audio can create, that kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. What is that? How do you do it?
Yeah, what's vibe? I think it all comes down to like energies. I've talked a lot about like, do I vibe with the artist, or do we have a good vibe together? And it's kind of like if you walk into a room and the people in that room just had an argument, you can feel it, like if something just feels weird. And that works in all different directions, that you can tell if they were just making out and you walked in the room, the opposite end. Something is just different about the vibe of the room. And then with sound, the frequencies we hear that we perceive as pitch, the lower the frequency, the lower the pitch, the higher the frequency, the higher the pitch. Those have energy behind them too, like in a very like scientific way. Like the higher the energy, the higher the frequency is. It's pushing more air molecules and everything out of the way. And we can hear that energy in a room like as resonances, as bass frequencies getting trapped in corners and stuff like that too. So it's this emotional thing, but it's also this scientific thing.
Wow. But it's interesting as a philosophical question. It doesn't have to be absolutely answered, because when you have the presence of something that is real and identifiable but is also mysterious, how did it end up sticking there? It's just a fascinating phenomena. My connection to this towards trance and vibe is doom metal.
Cool.
The plodding, the rhythmic drumming, which is journeying, the plodding bass, the just repeat, and it talk about mood and vibe and atmosphere, and it's extended so it can last 8, 10, 12 minutes, or it could be the whole show for an hour. But it's felt.
Yeah.
It's felt, And it's a powerful, if you're sensitive to it, you're sensitive to it, Audrey, I am. But if you're sensitive to it, it's like, whoa, I'm on the wave, right? I'm on the surfboard, right?
Yeah. And I love that you brought up doom metal. I think that is like really, it's probably like one of the closest genres to classical. Like, that sounds kind of crazy, but, there's a lot of precision in it, and it is like this extended kind of song, you know, it's not like a 3 or 4 minute song, you know, and the same thing with like a sonata in classical music, you might get like 24 minutes or 12 minutes or, you know, in a symphony, it might be like 40 minutes. So it ranges, but the technical aspect and the textures are there, you know, and there's that crossover between the two.
Yeah. I was talking with Audrey Martinovich in Madison, Wisconsin, and it's a great pleasure to chat with you. I've lived in Wisconsin for about a decade and worked with the teachers and support staff out there. Love the town. I love the music there. Although you'll know what this means, I'm a Milwaukee music guy.
Okay.
Metal, you know. So for me, I love a lot of the music that you do. I love a lot of genres of music, but my go-to for live isn't the person with the folk guitar. In general,
totally,
it tends to be Milwaukee's metal.
Yep.
That tends to be my live experience. But I've always appreciated about that about the area because you know Milwaukee's a metal town. And Madison is smaller, and we get some great stuff there. But it's a little bit more of that.
It's so funny, yeah. You know? That's a difference I never really like thought about too much. But it makes perfect sense, you know. Like as you get over into Madison, and like I live in the Driftless area. It is more like folk, singer, songwriter, indie, like Bon Iver. And, you know, I guess he's a little more up north, but, you know, but yeah, Milwaukee's like more hip hop and metal and everything. It's cool dichotomy across Wisconsin.
Yeah. I love those two towns. Audrey, I got the big question for you. I got to throw, it's not a softball. It's a fastball. Why is there something rather than nothing?
I mean, we've talked a lot about like energy and stuff. And so I think that we are just kind of like containers of energy of the universe. And so we're all tied together in that way. And so I think that our pursuit of something is to just like explore that connection and those energies in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the container aspect. Like there's something, I don't know, it really vibes with me.
Oh,
as
good.
Far as like how you, no, I like how you capture the energy and like what we are as vessels. For me,
exactly, a vessel. That's a good word.
Well, it for me, like the only way I've been able to understand personhood, so I'm a philosopher and I studied Buddhist philosophy. And I was able to understand personhood a lot better from Buddhists, who basically said, like, look, it's like a bundle of sticks that we are. Like, we're a bundle, and they call it a skanda. We're a bundle of stuff, like emotions. It's like collected in a space, but don't think it's like a unified, molded, it's just a bunch of sticks tied together.
I like that. We take ourselves way too seriously, you know. We're just a bundle of things.
it feels like that, and it's not a bad thing. It can be a glorious thing too. Audrey, I have a surprise question at the end, but for right now, and it's a little bit self-indulgent, so what I want you to do now is, can you let the listeners know, and I know you work on a lot of different things and you're based in the Midwest, let listeners know how to connect with your stuff, your services, things you put out there, projects you've worked on.
Yeah. So the website for the studio is audioforthearts.com. And you can find me on Instagram at audioaudrey. I have a link tree up that has a Spotify playlist with a bunch of stuff I've done, links to other social media articles I've written about how to keep music in politics and reviews for gear and all sorts of different stuff. So yeah, find me online.
That's lovely. And I know it's just great presence that you have online, and a lot of the projects you work on are just very vibrant. The question I have for you, here's the self-indulgent piece of it too. And this is going to be a little bit like humbling. I think that Antonoff, who works with Taylor Swift, is a brilliant producer. And I've lacked the language to be able to articulate it. And I'm a huge Swiftie. And with Folklore, the album, here's the funny piece about it. Folklore, the album was released. And for me, when there are great albums, and for me, a great album is like The Cure, Disintegration, like mood, atmospheric. It's a little bit dark. It's going into the soul and seeing if you can come out. And that's what that one, that like Folklore is to me. So obviously I'm like really, really into it.
Yeah.
But there's a piece here I was wondering if you could help me with. There seems to be such an enormous emotional content to like this kind of skimmed down, like vocal, like not vocals, but like the sound. They did a studio version. And it's almost like these heart-wrenching stories that are just like left bare.
Yeah.
Just left sitting there. How does the producer make it like that and still sound whole? You know what I mean?
Because
you can put Taylor Swift voice on it, but it's Spear, you know, like Bon Iver. It's Spear, and it holds all this emotional content, in my opinion. Do you know how?
I love that like style. It's kind of like a minimalist sort of thing, you know, but it's still, but it doesn't sound empty. Yeah, I love that album too. And I mean, I think that is kind of always a question I'm like dealing with is like, should I add something to this? And I think that with Folklore, that's such a great example of how, you know, adding more and more stuff to those tracks would have taken away from the intimacy and everything. So it's just thinking about like, you know, how intimate do we want to get with this? And then how do we like hold that attention, you know? So with, you know, an acoustic guitar and a vocal, you can hold attention just by like adding some, you know, ear candy licks on that acoustic guitar or, you know, some vocalizations in the background or something there, you know, if you need to. But, you know, I feel like you kind of know it in your bones. Like for me, I listening to that album, I was just like so drawn into her voice and what she was saying. Exactly. Where everything else just kind of, you know, faded away and, you know, wasn't the main focus for me. It was like really just centered on the story. And I think that is what made it so powerful. It's like, it wouldn't be the same record if it had, you know, drum kits and bass and, you know, everything on top of it the whole time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And then you explain it. Cause like I said, I've been like, there's a strong connection of like the emotional connection of what's there. And I've been thinking about like, and it helps because I was like, well, a lot of people do spare things. A lot of people get out, you know, your guitar and sing your song, but it doesn't always be like, oh my God, like the content and the, so thank
keeping
you for
that vulnerability
your indulgence with that. Cause I really interested in, just learning about that dynamic some more. Audrey, I got to tell you, like talking to you is I've learned so much and it's really been a great pleasure to connect on, I think, some overlap and interest there on sound and horror. And
you
said you were a soprano as well in the past. You had done some singing, right?
Yeah.
I've had a couple, not that I prefer sopranos because I'm really a little bit ignorant on this, but I've had a couple guests that were sopranos and I've been trying to bring in, you know, kind of classical music, but also I guarantee you, Audrey, you will get your doom metal episodes here as well.
Yeah,
so,
good.
Audrey Martinovich, thank you so much. And your work with Audio for the Arts and your work with artists, absolutely incredible. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Ken. I've had so much fun talking with you too. Thank you.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.